Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Buckhead Business Radio Show.
All right, the favorite time of the week or the day, and it is that hour, Buckhead Business Radio. Rich Casanova here, broadcasting live from our beautiful studios here in the heart of Buckhead. We always talk about our million-dollar view. If you haven't seen it, you haven't been on social media because it's the most photographed studio. Apologies to all the other studios, but it happens to be our favorite, yeah, in our favorite view. And matter of fact, Ryan McPherson, Red Hawk McPherson, is joining us in the studio as our engineer-producer. I think you are the photo bug from the studio. You've taken some photos of this view has been retweeted around the world.
I think so. And my future business is going to be a coffee table book of our view that we can, you know, get out to our listeners of all seasons. Because, we have broadcasts here a weekly and daily basis. Yep. So I think the view changes.
Absolutely. I think one of the funniest, we get a little off topic here, views of the studios. Every so often they have the window washers hanging from outside the building. And back in the day, we used to get all our guests to do our Radio X sign. We had the window washer hanging outside the building doing our Radio X sign. A great visual for radio, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, so let's jump into the show. But beforehand, just any updates here from the studio? We have some new shows coming online here. We're working on some new shows. Franchise Business Radio has launched recently, Kids Business Radio. And some of the folks from Kids Business have actually been on Shark Tank, gotten deals from sharks here, been in the studio. And Georgia Business Radio comes up on Friday, right? You have some interest. You have a celebrity guest.
Yeah, this Friday, we're going to have CEO and founder of Bubba Gump Shrimp Company Restaurant. He has written a book now called Gumption, and he's coming into the studio to talk about how he's really kind of taken a new angle on the restaurant approach and grown these businesses and restaurants into
like hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue.
Very successful. We're looking forward to that on Friday.
Okay. And then finally, just some upcoming shows that stay tuned for. Food and Beverage Radio, I think, is happening next week, as well as International Business Radio, which is going to be great with 38 International Chambers of Commerce, 81 embassy consulates, and yada yada yada. So that's a just a recap of what's going on here from our studio. Let's jump into our show this morning. We have a great lineup of guests here joining us, and it's going to be some compelling conversations. And so, Ryan, you want to kind of welcome a couple of our guests to start things off?
My pleasure. First, I'd like to introduce the man who's going to talk about business and how he is helping that out there, Mr. Troy Gauthier. Good morning, sir.
Hi.
How are you?
Great.
Welcome to the Buckhead Business Radio X Studios.
Thank you.
And what will you be sharing just a little bit more in detail with our listeners?
Well, I'll talk a little bit about my company and the business we're doing and some of the international growth prospects that are going on.
That's exciting. And how long have you been doing that?
My company's 2.5 years old, but I've been in the business for 30 years.
30 years, a successful businessman. So we look forward to getting behind the scenes. So what makes a business go for you?
Very good.
Thank you, sir, for joining us. And also, it's my pleasure to introduce Karen Rands. Good morning.
Good morning.
And you are a compassionate capitalist, is that right?
Yes.
So tell our listeners a little bit about that and how you got that title.
Well, compassionate capitalist is what I think is kind of fundamental to what makes America great. And that's where people that have the knowledge, resources, and capital, money, invested into entrepreneurial endeavors to bring innovation to the market, create jobs, and ultimately create wealth for those founders and those investors. And the cycle continues and we grow. Our company, you know, innovation, so much innovation comes from the United States. And it's really, I think, the heartbeat of what keeps our economy strong.
Some folks say, but those two words might not go together, capitalist and compassion. You know, capitalist, you must step on others to grow your business, but it's good someone out there is bringing that compassion to business growth. So
it is my soapbox.
Oh, good. We look forward for you to standing on that and telling us all about it here in a little
shouting
bit.
Shouting to the world, yeah.
Very good.
I may have just co-coined a phrase with Karen. I like the idea of Innovation Nation.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Nice.
All right. So, all right. And Ryan also joining us in the studio. I'll jump into the conversation with our next guest and do. Actually, why don't you maybe introduce him with our bio? Craig Finn is joining us in the studio.
Craig Finn is a business growth strategist that left his cushy corporate job to follow his entrepreneurial dreams full time, only to fail flat on his face and have not one but four companies go under. Mighty accomplishment there. Right, exactly. However, that all turned around for Craig when his fifth entrepreneurial endeavor exceeded $1 million in sales in the first 8 months. Okay. The company is now in its fourth year in business and has surpassed $5 million in sales. Welcome, Mr. Craig Fenn.
Wow.
Thank you, Ryan.
My pleasure.
Welcome to the show, Craig.
Thank you, Rich, for having me.
Absolutely. And I've heard in the business annals is that most Uber successful people fail about 13 times in business. So you're way ahead of the curve.
Well, that's a good thing, actually. I thought I had failed one too many times. Right. So that's good to hear.
But you got back up and went back to the cash register for more, right?
Absolutely. I'm very, very, I persevere, you would say.
Yeah,
I'm relentless.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, we've known each other for a while. You've passed across in networking events and you've hosted a number of those. I think I attended one of your seminars a while back.
Yes.
And so I know a little bit about yourself, but it's first time in the studio and it's always a different experience to kind of delve in a little bit more depth. And so let's kind of jump into, before we talk about maybe questions, a little bit of your background, maybe originally from where and a little bit of your family history or...
Oh, awesome. So I'm from New York City,
okay.
Big Apple. So, nice. You know, that's where the, I guess, relentlessness comes from.
Yeah.
My family is both Caribbean American and African American. Father's side of the family is from Jamaica, West Indies, and my mother's side of the family is from New York.
Okay.
I was born and raised in New York City. I moved to Atlanta about 6 or 7 years now.
Oh, okay.
So I guess you would say I'm family now.
Right, yeah. I thought you'd been here longer than that.
No,
so I must have met you, not too long after. Yeah.
You probably met me within a year of me actually being here.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm ballparking that. So you ever get down to Jamaica or?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, nice.
I'm scheduled to go back early next year as well.
Okay. All right. So let's kind of jump into it. You definitely have a compelling backstory there. I mean, I've known a little bit about you, but I didn't realize you had that many failures. But I've known your recent success. So, I mean... Wow.
Well, most people don't know about the failures, right? Most people, you hear about the successes, and you don't know about the failures. So, say it's about a 10-year overnight success.
Nice. So, business growth strategist. What is that in layman's terms, or dumb it down for us, or what exactly do you? What's your day-to-day life look like as a business strategist or growth strategist?
The good thing about what I do is there is no typical day-to-day. However, what I have the pleasure of getting up and doing every day of my life is helping companies to implement revenue growth strategies. So when a company has felt like they have plateaued, they've hit the glass ceiling, or they're struggling to increase their revenues for whatever reason, be it they have exhausted their current customer base, or they don't understand what it's going to take to go from where they are now to where it is that they want to go, they call on someone like myself to come in and help them to design a strategy that's going to move them forward. In a measurable way. I mean, something that they can actually qualify.
Right.
And I go in and I assess where a company is. I assess where it is that they want to go. In our world, we call it a gap analysis, essentially. And I basically design a strategy that's going to take them from where they are to where it is that they want to be revenue-wise.
Okay. And obviously, the conversation here is about entrepreneurship. But in New York... Any great stories or horror stories about, obviously you didn't grow up as a small child as an entrepreneur. Is any jobs that kind of life lessons that led you to become an entrepreneur? Or,
So here's the thing. My first example of entrepreneurship was from my mother.
Okay.
I watched my mother step out and go into entrepreneurship. I was about 5 or 6 years old.
Okay.
And it was really out of a need. It was a necessity. She was working a job and it simply... There wasn't enough money being made to support not just me and my siblings, but she had also taken on her sister siblings as well. So I watched my mother step out and go into business for herself in order to be able to provide for her family. But for me, so that was the starting point.
Okay.
But of course, throughout life, you need some other,
some
more preparation,
right,
if you would.
Real world, yeah.
So I went to school. I did the school thing, if you would, pro education, and went to college for business management.
Okay.
Graduated with a degree in business management. Right. I was fortunate to graduate magna cum laude.
Wow.
And but I also worked in the investment banking field.
Okay.
For a number of years. Actually, I was with Wilmington Trust, and I was in their finance and administration division, heading up finance for third in command in finance for New York, Dublin, Ireland, and Taijing, China.
Okay, I didn't think there was a Dublin, China, but
exactly.
You corrected yourself.
So Dublin, Ireland, and Taijing, China.
So that's a little bit of your journey, and then so what was maybe one of your first, you know, ventures, and what do you consider your greatest success to date in business?
My first venture was at 16.
Okay.
And my assistant was my little sister. So hopefully nice. I didn't break
family
any
business.
Labor laws. But that was the first, and it was a talent management and booking company. My family has a very deep background in the entertainment industry.
Oh, okay.
So I figured, well, hey, we have family in entertainment. We have actually family members who are signed and well-known recording artists.
Wow.
So why not go into entertainment?
Yeah.
So I started a talent management and booking agency. And let's just say that it was an expensive hobby for a 16-year-old putting all of his change into a business that didn't make much money.
Right.
But that was the first one. And you said, what was the other part of the
question? To date, what's your most successful or greatest success, either in business or outside, or a story you can share with our listeners, you know, as far as a takeaway? Obviously, you're probably your current business, but...
Well, I mean, financially, certainly, my current business has been a great success. We just topped the $5 million. We did a little over 5.2
wow.
last year. So
man,
that
awesome.
Is certainly very grateful for that. But outside of that, I think the success for me is being able to wake up every day and do what it is that I love doing and actually get paid to do that.
Right.
I have not worked for someone else since the early part of 2008. So that, to me, I consider that the most successful.
Well, it's like that adage, if you enjoy what you're doing, you never work the next day in your life, right?
Well, I surely work every day.
I know.
Yes,
sometimes those are a little, but it doesn't feel like work if you really, although it is, can be, you know, especially with the internet, you know, we live in a 24-hour world, and sometimes it's hard to be unplugged, but it's much better than going to a job you just don't enjoy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, listen, I would not trade what I do now for anything, you know, work-wise or business-wise. I certainly have my days where even what I do now, right. and I'm like, why am I doing this today?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't want to do it, but I absolutely love it.
We may not have time for each of the four failed companies, but is there an example or just kind of like the big picture of, you know, how did you go from those failed companies to 5 million under 4 years? I mean, what takeaway would you give or a nugget to listeners and advice, if you will?
So here's the thing. Interestingly enough, prior to sitting before you today, I did not know that most people fail 13 times.
Yeah, that's what I...
So that's actually new information right. for me. So thank you for that, because now I can share that. But the turning point for me was when my financial management company, when for me, what I considered to be a failure, when that company went under.
Right.
That's when I realized that I needed to do things differently. I needed to... It was more of a haphazard management structure.
Right.
And I needed more strategy. And interestingly enough, being in corporate America, everything was about strategy.
Oh, big time, yeah.
Everything.
And structure.
In the investment banking world, it was all about strategy and strategic plans. But then you leave that and you go into entrepreneurship and you decide you're going to just do it differently and more relaxed and here and there. But when I decided and with my financial management company after it went under, that I really needed to implement a strategy and stick to it, that's when it changed for me. And I also, with that, also decided to get some assistance and some outside guidance. So I hired a coach to work with me, because when you are working on your business day in and day out, you're really attached to it. And emotions do get involved and so on and so forth.
Absolutely.
Ryan McPherson here, just going to jump in with a few questions. So you say your business coach really
yes.
helped you succeed. And what do you attest that to? Or how'd you find him or her?
Well, I found my business coach actually, so the good old internet.
Right, absolutely, yeah.
I found my first business coach on the internet, and she is very actually well known, Allie Brown.
Okay.
And she's been featured on Secret Millionaire.
Oh, wow. I love that show, yeah.
Yes, and that was my first, and she actually introduced me to my current business coach. So while I actually coach people and help to implement revenue growth strategies, I actually still do work with a coach myself, because I believe that it's important to have that unbiased guidance.
That's great. Otherwise, you feel like you're out there all alone and swimming, you know, against a current that you can't see, and you need help to, you know, someone come in and put you in the right direction.
Absolutely. And also, you know, it's about having that person who will sometimes tell you, okay, yes, I know this sounds good to you, and I know you really, really want to do this, but not now. Mm-hmm. And that saves you a lot of time, error, and money.
Now, in the studio, we often have lots of entrepreneurs who come in and have had, you know, some not so much success or have reached success, but they make sacrifices along the way. What have been some of those you have made?
relationships. Big sacrifices. You know, family time.
Mm-hmm.
I have sacrificed a great deal there, not being able to go to all of the family events and spend that quality time. I've received the hate mail through Facebook.
Oh, no.
yes, we've resorted to attacking me on Facebook, like, you didn't come to such and such. So I've sacrificed a lot of that family time. And just to be very vulnerable up front, she'll probably kill me for this. I don't know if this is the result of it, but I've actually sacrificed my marriage in this process.
Oh, no. Oh.
And Rich, you didn't even know that.
No, I didn't. That's news, yeah.
So, you know, I can't blame it exactly on entrepreneurship, but I would certainly say that this journey has been a part of that process.
And so that's a huge sacrifice. You
it
know,
really
some people
is.
Make those choices in life to not upset the family structure, those relationships they have. So there's got to be motivation that comes from you. What motivates you to succeed and continue on this path?
Well, I will say this. I did not willingly sacrifice the marriage.
Like, right, you didn't go out of your way to do
you
it.
You don't say, okay, well, we're just going to throw this to the wolves. But, you know, here's
the casualty of the...
It becomes anything that you sacrifice, it becomes a matter of the commitments that you have made to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It was never about me committing to a business. It was about me committing to myself. The business succeeded as a result of me committing to myself.
So you're committed to success.
I am committed to success, yes, but not in the sense of the words where people, you know, what we've made success today.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that money is to be made to buy things. I believe that money is to be generated to change things.
Okay.
And I am committed to the change that I want to see.
Ah, there we go. Now we're getting to the motivation behind Mr. Finn here. He's motivated to change things. The business is just a way.
It's just a tool.
That's right. And so, on a day-to-day basis, it's got to be a struggle to continue. And you got to find those little small steps of success along the way. And how would you define them other than the bottom line? You know, we've talked a lot about the money you've generated, but where do you see some of these great success stories along the way?
You know, I mean, so... What defines, all right, where do I see some of these great success stories?
Yeah.
So number one, it is an honor to be able to connect with a business owner, to connect with an individual who, you know, when you meet them, they're struggling to pay mortgage, they're struggling to make ends meet, and then you work with them, and it, you know, it all turns around. Mm-hmm. You know, they're now buying their homes cash, and they're able to send their children to college. I remember a client of mine's, I won't say her name because I didn't get her permission. You know, she came to me a few years back and she had created a wonderful product. And it's the client that I love because it's those unique success stories that, you know, you don't see every day.
Right, right.
Created a wonderful product. She had a handful of prospects and I looked at her and I said, this is great. But even if you close all of your prospects, which is highly unlikely because no one has 100% closing rate, not even the greatest salesperson. Even if you close all of your prospects, you're still not going to generate the money you need to make. And we agreed to work together. In about a month, we had increased our prospect list to over 600. Within 6 months, we had negotiated an international license and a distribution deal. And now today, her product is in all 50 states and in 2 countries.
Wow, wow.
That is the type of, that's the success that keeps me going.
Well, that speaks volumes. When you hear, we had some folks in the other day, we're talking about in terms of sales, stories sell. Right. I mean, that's just since day one. And that's a great story that you can share and people can relate to. I want to go back to this idea of relationships and sacrifices. I remember I heard Mark Cuban say one time that he didn't during when he was building his empire, if you will. Right. He didn't take a vacation for 7 years, not a single vacation for 7 years. And, you know, you can see two sides of that coin, right? Most people are not willing to make those sacrifices. And a lot of times, you know, it's an individual choice. I mean, not everybody that's going to be, is going to be the route that they're going to want to take. But a lot of times to reach, you know, the point that you want to get, you got to make sacrifices along the way. It's just a matter of, is it a good trade-off for each individual, right?
And you make that decision at the individual level. That is right. A personal decision, right? Yeah. I think most sacrifices are not made consciously. While there are certain sacrifices that you make consciously where you sit down and say, okay, I'm willing to give this up. Like, I am willing to give up vacation.
Right.
And that was certainly something that I gave up for a long time as well. But the other sacrifices, they're just certain sacrifices that happen just as a result of your daily commitment to whatever it is that you're doing.
And I think most people, I kind of hear what you're saying, because I think most people maybe make their, just work like day and night, work really hard. I mean, but... I think you need to have, if I'm going to make the sacrifice, what's going to be my goal? What's the point in making that sacrifice?
Absolutely.
Not just for the sake of sacrificing, well, I'm working really hard because I'm growing my business. I think you have to say that there's going to be a carrot at the end of that stick, right? I'm going to work. I'm not going to take this. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to buy this. Because, but a lot of people don't fill in the rest of that blank. They just keep working.
It's the mission. So yeah, essentially what you're saying is, what is your mission, right? Why are you doing whatever it is that you're doing? For me, my goal is to help 1 million people become millionaires.
Wow.
And that's a tall order.
Yeah.
So
so I put my name on that list or whatever. Yeah.
Sign me up.
So to talk to us, we got to take not really a break here in a moment, but we're going to come back with some additional conversations. We want to let our listeners the best way to find out about you. But what's next for Craig Finn? What's their next venture or on the horizon?
Well, my team and I, we have quite a bit going on. So, you know, we're working on possibly coming to a television.
Okay.
Near everybody.
All right.
But in addition to that, we have an event coming up in July.
All right.
So I know you came to, I think the last workshop you came to was sometime last year.
Right.
And I haven't done one since.
I know. Yeah. I didn't get my invite, so I figured it was either off the list or you weren't doing one. Yeah.
I've been taking it easy,
no worries,
but we do have one coming up in July.
Okay.
So more information will be going out on that about the third Saturday in July, in fact. So that'll be fun because I always like to have fun at my events, as you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, that's really what I have going on. And every day I'm getting up and doing what I love.
And maybe before you jump on your TV program or in tandem, you can do a radio show right from here, from our studios. We'll talk about that. Maybe.
Absolutely.
Who knows? I have a prompting that might be on the horizon. That sounds good to me.
I would love to.
Okay. So let our listeners know the best way to reach out to you and find out about Craig Finn.
All right. So awesome. So what I did actually, instead of giving the listeners a general website, which of course they can just go to craigfinn.com,
right,
I decided to actually give the listeners a little gift. You know, since it is a business radio show, I share a quick report on mymoneymanifesto.com. Again, mymoneymanifesto.com. Wow. And there they can go and download a report where I share three simple steps that helped me to actually generate over the $5 million in sales.
That's a good giveaway right there, yeah.
Good. And folks can find you on LinkedIn or any other media platforms?
Yeah, well, they can find me everywhere. So LinkedIn, Craig Finn.
And spell Finn because I know. Yeah.
Yes. So P as in Peter, H-I-N-N.
Yeah, very good.
So, and Craig is C-R-A-I-G. LinkedIn, Craig Finn. Facebook, Craig Finn. Instagram, official Craig Finn. Twitter, Craig Finn again.
Okay. Twitter. I heard a little of the New York accent right there. Did you hear that? Twitter.
Just a little.
It comes out every now and again.
Okay, so we want to jump on to our next guest here. And first, maybe remind our listeners, you're listening to Buckhead Business Radio X here from our Buckhead studio. And you can find us all over the internet as well. And we want to thank everyone for tuning in to Buckhead Business Radio X.
Very good, Rich. It's my distinct pleasure to introduce our next guest. Karen Rands is a venture capitalist and a compassion capitalist, or I should say, a venture catalyst and a compassionate capitalist, and a dominant force in the entrepreneur and investor markets with her blogs, published articles, frequent speaking engagements, and her radio show. Over a decade ago, she left the corporate world to initially serve the entrepreneur and investor community here in Atlanta, rapidly expanding to the national stage. Entrepreneurs are helped through expert knowledge and strategic services offered by Launch Funding Network to develop capitalization strategies and gain access to capital. Hundreds of entrepreneurs have succeeded in obtaining startup and growth capital as a result of Karen's educational programs and her Launch FN access to capital system. Karen recognized long ago that to successfully bridge the capital divide for entrepreneurs, it was critical to build an educated and motivated investor community. After building one of the most active angel investor groups in the Southeast with the Network of Business Angel Investors, she shifted her focus to those high net worth executives that have desire but little time to be involved in angel investment group activities. High net worth men and women learn how to diversify their investment portfolio with equity ownership in private companies by subscribing to the Inside Secrets to Angel Investing and joining the National Network of Angel Investors. We are excited for Karen to share her insights on this dynamic topic and in this dynamic radio business platform.
Absolutely. Wow. What an introduction. Welcome back to the show.
Great. Glad to be here. Excited.
Absolutely. So I want to, I don't know if it's on our topic to want to hear a little bit in a minute about your radio show, obviously. But first of all, let's go back to that title for listeners that are just tuning in right now. Compassionate Capitalist. I mean, that is an intriguing title. I mean, expound on that a little bit.
Well, I adopted that title as a result of the radio show. I had started the radio show as a way to promote the companies that participated in one of the big events that we used to run called the Southeast Private Equity Conference. And we would interview companies that pitched at the angel events. And so it was called the SPEC Radio Show.
Okay.
And when the economy started to tank, you know, 5 years ago or so, I said, you know, we needed to have a different focus and it needed not be specific to the show. It needed to be something. And I really love this idea of compassionate capitalism. And at the time there was, it seemed like word was on the street that there was plenty of investment capital out there. A lot of people, the high net worth guys realized what was happening. The banks were defaulting. You know, there was, the stock market was unstable. So they were pulling their money out of the market. It was just on the sidelines. And so the idea of trying to create those people that had made money through capitalism, the idea of being compassionate, and you can have your own direct impact in your local community, if you will, or on a larger national scale by helping to bring that innovation to the market, creating those jobs, creating wealth through ownership in those companies. You know, that really was a way that you could recycle capital.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
to do it not just to make money, but to do it because of the impact it has, you know, when you can create, I mean, our lives change when we have innovation and, you know, when you can create jobs, it's all good.
So is the main emphasis on capital ventures as opposed to these high net worth folks that have philanthropic, you know, foundations or are driven by kind of social, you know, foundations or whatever? Or is this more emphasis on building that business to generate more jobs and revenue within the community?
Yeah, I would say that my focus is on the latter, creating those jobs specifically to those companies. Because, and I was actually listening to a TED Talk the other day, and it was one of the venture capitalist guys talking about, you know, capitalism. He was being kind of sarcastic, but it should die in the sense of what we think of it, it's all about, you know, creating money. And he said that it was shocking as he did an analysis and even his own company, how little corporations give away philanthropically.
Oh, right, yeah.
Right. And he was creating sort of this accountability thing where, you know, companies would be assessed by the communities, the public, on what they give back. So if you, it all comes down to if you can create a profitable company. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
Okay.
Pointing to Craig Finn.
Right. You can't see me pointing.
Yeah, through his radio, yeah.
Oh, yeah. To Craig's point, and you have a compassionate leader at the forefront. They're treating their employees good.
Right.
They're giving back to their community. They're supporting it all through the ability to create profits. And, you know, I've often said that, you know, poor people can't help poor people, but if we can help create wealth and it's wealth that has the right motivation within it, then we can do a lot of good things within our community at all levels.
I saw something online the other day about the poor and how, unfortunately, I didn't read the whole article, so I probably shouldn't even reference it, but I saw the headline that got my attention, but it was like how the poor can, in masses, can generate, can change it, make a difference in the economy. Unfortunately, maybe I should have read the article before I reference it again. But talking about millennials, is this kind of, would you attribute this to a recent phenomenon as far as, again, as you know, you can't be in today's world without hearing these conversations about their culture is a big impact. And I did read an article, you know, at least most of it to this point, about the millennials is, you know, different generations. In terms of your livelihood, money was near the top of the list, if not the top, in terms of, you know, I'm going to pursue this because of the transaction. But for millennials, it's not at the top of the list anymore. They are kind of driven by this culture, and they're drawn to a company that has a bigger picture of giving back. Yes or yes?
Yes and yes. Okay. in fact, I've done some research on millennials and motivations of millennials and from various, you know, events that I've been at and sat and listened and then continued to research it because You know, in the reality for most companies that you're hiring millennials, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
so their motivation, and it's been something that has stumped big companies for a while on how, because the things that worked for my generation, like say, for example, in IBM in the corporate world is very, very different for the millennials that come through, and what's the motivation. And so I think that, I'm hoping that as a result of this idea that there's a little bit more to the meaning of life, and you also see that sort of as a culture too, where people are deciding to downsize their lifestyle because the quality of life is better. And even for myself, I can say that my business, when I was running these big events and we're generating this money and I got these employees, and life was not necessarily fun. It was go, 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 adrenaline, 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 right? And so as my daughter reached a certain age and the economy, I just use that as a moment to kind of step back and say, I can have a better quality of life generating less money necessarily for that moment in time until, guess what? She just graduated. So, you know, full speed ahead now. But I think you're exactly right that there's, I think there's an opportunity, and maybe as a result of some of the things that are happening with the way companies raise capital now, that these millennials may decide that instead of buying that fancy new car, they're going to stay with a regular car that they have and start taking and carving out and putting money into helping some of these innovative things come to market. And that's kind of where you see a lot of happening with the crowdfunding and crowdsourcing.
Well, just speaking of cars, I mean, it's a changing world. I mean, in a fast track pace as well. I mean, even methods of transportation are changing, right? I mean, we had the folks in here, the founders of Zipcar, right? And a lot of these people, to own a car is not a foreign idea, but it's not like an absolute given as it used to be, right? With Uber and all kinds of other, and most of them want to be centered near public transport. And it's a very different, you know, but go back to this, and again, talking about downsizing, there is, I don't know if he's the founder or worldwide, created this phenomenon of the tiny house. You heard of this phenomenon, right? And they're literally like these little shoebox homes. And he was just speaking at the BBA over here, the Buckhead Business Association. It's a different culture. I mean, but let's talk about, crowdfunding. Switch gears here, a little different topic. There's a lot of buzz about that. We've had some folks in here talking about this. I'm intrigued by the idea, right? But it's not as easy as most people would think, because people think, oh, I'll just create a crowdfunding platform and raise all kinds of money. But they don't realize they need to have a crowd, right?
Yes,
they
exactly.
They get drawn to this, you know, the sexy romantic, oh, I'll just throw up a website. I'll go on Kickstarter or Indiegogo. And and we've had people that have horribly failed at that. But what's the impact on the capital divide?
Okay, so the good news is, with all of the buzz of crowdfunding, is that first of all and foremost, our government and our political leaders listened in the fact that there is a challenge with entrepreneurs getting access to capital, and really access to the very people that have the money to give them. Banks aren't equipped. They're not designed to do that. Grants are, you know, limited in what they can do, and that you really have to be able to reach out beyond a group, a formal group, or beyond a financial planner, if you will, to reach that person that has that money. And so how do you go about doing that? So the reality of crowdfunding and what happened in the Jobs Act is that the actual crowd that funding that you would do is small amounts of money that most people think of and associate. There's a lot of misinformation out there about what is crowdfunding. That currently is done in a rewards base. So it works really well for entertainment companies and in consumer products companies because you're exchanging something for that capital. But when it comes to equity crowdfunding on the smaller scale, it's, you know, where a guy that makes $100,000 can put $1,000 into a company. It hasn't actually been officially approved yet. It's available within certain states. On a state like in Georgia, it's available for interstate, but there's a lot of misinformation. It's very close to being available. Yeah. It's just that there's a few more things at the SEC because they really haven't figured out how to regulate and organize the companies that are going to. So they've said you can do it, but they're not really, haven't really given approval to the companies that give you the platforms to do it. So it's still so very confusing. But where it really works well, and it's not really crowdfunding, so to speak, it's more of the general solicitation where they've taken existing regulatory laws and they've tweaked those that have enabled entrepreneurs to reach out through the internet and public solicitation, direct mail campaigns, whatever, run an ad on TV, and find investors that have a special interest in what you're doing and have them come to look, do the due diligence and do all that stuff. The trick is that they have to be accredited investors, and they can't just say they're accredited. They have to prove that they're accredited. And that means that they have to have significant amount of wealth on a sustained basis so that they can make sizable investments and not feel the pain of losing it, which as much as maybe somebody that only makes $100,000 might feel the pain of losing
it. Right, yeah. It's kind of like the government hasn't quite cracked the code and figured it out. It's kind of like drones. You may or may not be able to buy a drone or fly a drone. We haven't quite figured out when the regulation is going to kick in. Yeah.
Yeah, crowdfunding is certainly some murky waters out there for a lot of folks. And whether you're an investor or you're looking to be invested in, it certainly still has a little ways to go to kind of establish itself as a really a go-to spot for it works for some, it doesn't for others. But talk more about the investors themselves and how you put them in contact with those businesses that need help, or how do you guide an investor into which business they should invest in?
Okay, well, the back when I first, probably a decade ago when I first was getting started on this and I was kind of rebuilding the NBA, and I, a financial manager came to me and asked me, I have a guy that wants to invest in a private company, and I don't know, I can't by law, the SEC will slap my hand if I tell him how to invest in a private company. So where can he go get training? And I was stunned that there was no education available for angel investors. You've got how to invest in real estate, how to invest in public stock market. There's all kinds of stuff, but there was really nothing for angel investors. And now, you know, the Kauffman Foundation has done a lot with angel groups to offer programs. But when it comes to, you know, going to get educated as an individual, it's just non-existent. So I started to research it to try to figure out why that was and to develop it. And I found out that a lot of angel investors, and it was stunning to me, the way they learned was by losing money. And that's a horrible way to learn how to be an investor, right? Oh, yeah, I won't do that again.
Sink and so, or swim, yeah.
Yeah, so in order for it to have a sustainable investor community, you've got to help them not lose money by being a little bit smarter about how they make their investments. What are the terms to look for? What do you avoid? What, and then a lot of it is common sense. So you take out the emotion of, oh, I like this deal,
right?
And at this outrageous valuation,
right,
where there's almost impossible for them to make money on it because the company can't raise more money later on.
But it's really cool.
Yeah, and it's really cool, and they lose their money. So you try to get them to be very similar to, you know, some of the investment philosophies for public companies. If you understand the product and you understand their profit strategy, then you have the potential to ensure that they can make money and therefore you can make money. And it's really a fundamental tenet of it. And then the rest of it is just becoming very familiar with it, so you're not scared about making the investment. It's much more comfortable because you're familiar with the process. And so that's really what the education program is about. And we're trying to target those investors that aren't a part of angel investor groups, that don't necessarily have that same support network, but don't really have the time, and they're savvy when it comes to looking at a financial statement, looking at a business strategy, because they do a lot of their own analysis on the public markets.
Yeah, it's definitely some pretty dicey and choppy waters out there, right? And in your role, like dealing with the SEC, they might not just slap your hand. They could put a wristband on there and put the hands together, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So talk to us about, educating these investors. What's a challenge for entrepreneurs in raising capital? I mean, if you had to pick one or two off the short list.
Well, I would say that to the point that was made earlier, that you have to have a crowd, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the nice thing about the whole programs that are available now is that you can, it's transparency,
right,
to be able to reach out into a community. The fundamentals for a business raising capital. So on one hand, there's a lot more access to capital. And even within our own community here in Atlanta, it's phenomenal what has happened in the last 5 years. And there's a lot of investors that are getting involved in in educating and teaching entrepreneurs and attracting their friends to be investors. And so there's a lot that's going on. And so within Atlanta itself, there's a lot more access to capital. And across the nation, there is with Steve Case's program of Rise of the Rest that he did, this roadshow he's doing. He's showcasing innovation in these B and C communities that are not Silicon Valley and not New, right. New York and Boston, and giving away $100,000 to wow. these companies when they do their pitch events. And it's really, who knows what the ripple effect will be like that. So one, you've got access to capital, but fundamentally what hasn't changed is that if an entrepreneur doesn't really understand their marketplace, how they're going to sell a product, create money, create revenues, create profit in that, and be very clear about how they're going to do that and create a return on that investment, they're not going to raise money. So one of the first, or at least all their money, they'll raise a couple $100,000 from friends, families, and fools, right, and then right. they'll go out of business, right? And so the problem, so I think that really, if a company is struggling raising capital, they really need to do a deep assessment of what's wrong within their message, within their strategy, within something that's limiting their ability to actually tell a story of how they're solving a problem and making money. And if they can do that, they will find the capital with time.
Well, it's kind of like what Craig was saying earlier, is that you have to analyze the current status of the business before you can kind of move forward and determine if this is a smart, you know, strategic move. And I just had a, you know, I don't know if it's an aha moment, but, you know, I think there probably always has been access to capital back to the original foundations of, you know, the early economies and then our current banking system. It's, money's always been there. But I think, would you agree, yes or no, or this a thought, a pattern of, you know, come the invention or arrival of the internet and now social media, because not just emails on the internet, but it's like connection to capital,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes, yeah.
So, I mean, it's bizarre that there's some folks here at ATV that have reached out to Richard Branson. He's investing in a company right down the street right here, right? And so it's that the ability to kind of connect,
mm-hmm.
right?
And the flip side of that, though, too, is when you were kind of limited within your community
right.
because, you know, it's who do you know, yeah, and who yeah. do they know, and
right.
stuff like that. A lot of times investors would invest in something thinking it was the only one solving that problem.
Yeah, yeah.
The reality,
right,
the
yeah.
world is flat. Well, you know, right. access to capital is flat, but also now you could have just as much, a lot of competition that are popping up in all these other places. And guess what? Now other investors can find them too. So the competitive landscape to succeed grows with that as well.
That's a great point, a great observation. Obviously, you're a subject matter expert on this topic, no doubt, because I'm a huge fan of Shark Tank, and I see that a lot, is they come into the Shark Tank a little bit blind, thinking they are from, you know, they just live in, you know, Raleigh, North Carolina, and now they're on this global platform, and for their community, it's the best thing since the toaster, right? right? And now they're on this stage, and the guys are looking at them like, what's to prevent me from just throwing some money at that and start my own deal?
Yeah.
Right?
So that's one of the tests.
That is definitely the flip side.
Is you know? If you can you succeed, is money's not money has to not it can't only be because you have the money to succeed. You have to have a competitive advantage, a barrier to entry that is goes beyond just getting capital.
Very well spoken, well said. So, Karen, let our listeners know you've got a boatload of social media. I've never seen anybody with more. I think, what do we count here, 11 or 12? I lost count, but what's the best way, or maybe a couple of the point of contact for you?
Well, probably the best way for entrepreneurs to reach out to me is to go to the Launch Funding Network website, and that's at launchfundingnetwork.com, L-A-U-N-C-H, Funding Network, or launchfn.com. And on there is a opt-in box, if you will, where they can sign up for our investor tips, and I have a series of emails that go out that gives them insights on raising capital, but also they can sign up for a free initial consultation with me to talk about what their strategy is, what's some of the best ways, what's the type of capital that they might attract based on the half hour session, so they can fill out a form for that. And then for potential investors that are curious about learning about being an angel investor, being a part of the National Network of Angel Investors, they can just go to that website. That's NNOAI for National Network of Angel Investors.com, and they can sign up for those, the Inside Secrets to Angel Investing, and get access to the ebook on there that's okay. currently free. And then, you know, you want to see how it all fits together, then it's CougarAndHoldings.com. That's where our portal for our general solicitation and 506C and Reg A offerings are done.
Reg A offerings, you said?
Reg A Plus. That's the new thing that the... Reg A Plus.
Caribbean? Did I miss something here? Whatever. Yeah. All right. So, and the other 27 sites will be posted on our blog or on our posting, whatever. Yeah. Yeah. So, so Karen, pleasure to have you here in the studio, and a wealth of knowledge for our listeners. And I just want to remind our listeners one more time before we introduce we call our anchor man, been waiting patiently here to join us on the program. And, but I want to remind our listeners who are listening to Buckhead Business Radio. And we are unabashedly pro-business. So send your family, your friends, your colleagues, and we love to continue the conversation with those folks as well if you're doing business anywhere here in Georgia. Ryan, who is our anchorman waiting patiently and joining us here in the studio?
Well, next is Troy Gauthier. He is the founder and managing director of Alliances Progress. He is an expert in ecosystem development and runs a member firm organization for strategic alliances. Troy is also the president of the Southeast Chapter of the Association of Strategic Alliance Professionals and a director on several advisory boards. Welcome, Troy.
Thank you.
All right, Troy, again, thanks for hanging out here. And president, I've always wanted to be a president of something. Can I be the president of this radio station? Is that a... Ryan gave me the head nod, so that's official, yeah. But meanwhile, so Troy, tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into your business and your goings-on. Are you from the Bahamas or from Miami, or where are you, what parts?
Well, I was born and raised in Kansas City.
Okay.
And grew up there and went to the University of Kansas, so I'm a Rock Chalk Jayhawk basketball
right, nice.
Fan. Then I went to France and did a master's degree. I'm French on my father's side,
okay.
So I'm a dual national, U.S. and European Union. Stayed there, lived and worked for 20 years, went to work for Capgemini as a junior consultant, worked my way up to partner. When Cap bought Ernst & Young, came back to the States, ran the integration program. It was a large program. We integrated 3,000 E&Y partners into Capgemini worldwide, and worked for a couple of other small companies, and now I have my own firm called Alliances Progress, and having fun and being an entrepreneur.
Wow, that's crazy. Did you say 20 years in France?
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You ever get back there? When's the last time?
Yeah, I go back once a quarter. I have a lot of business in Europe, and my wife is French, and my kids were born there, so we're all dual nationals in our family. Yeah,
that's amazing. I was born in Miami, lived in Virginia Beach, and now I'm here. That's pretty much my whole story. So amazing past there. So talk to us about your firm. What's your business radio? So what's your business model in terms of your business?
What we think is that the way businesses are organized and structured is changing very much from the old industrial hierarchical relationship with linear supply chains to networked organizations, what we call business and technology ecosystems, where the relation between client, supplier, colleague, competitor are all getting blurred. And so we have extremely complex deals being done where companies are coming together who were traditional competitors, for example, to bundle products and services to go to market, grow their service offerings internationally. And it's a very exciting area of business.
Can you give us an example of of some of those companies that might have melded together, a type of industry or a specific company?
Sure. Well, we have, first in the press, every day we read about these. The most recent one that was quite spectacular was IBM and Apple coming together doing deals. But if you go out to the West Coast in the technology firms out there, each of the companies will have a big, giant ecosystem map on their wall.
Really?
And they'll have a dozen or 20 companies that they're in relation with as they go to market.
I mean, that's mind-boggling. It is really like changing landscape. I mean, it wasn't too long ago. That would be just not I mean, unheard of, right?
Yeah,
I
that's
mean, they,
right.
They were kind of like enemies.
Yeah, and it's first, it's technology enabled. So, you know, you have to be able to have the physical networks and connectivity. And then there's also a mindset that's quite different. It has to do with the digital economy, and it has to do with globalization, and it has to do with flat organizations as opposed to hierarchical organizations. And we have a new concept called co-opetition, which is competition and complementary services baked into the same relationship. And so our firm designs and manages these advanced value networks.
I love that term. And but it is, like Karen and I were talking, it's almost a cultural kind of phenomenon within company entities, right?
Yeah, and it's not just business. It's also associations. It's also foundations. It's, all different forms of organizations that are working together and in these networked environments.
And what do you attribute this to? I mean, was there a tipping point or any benchmark you can point to that kind of led the way? Is there any kind of iconic, you know, event? I mean, there's typically not a singular event, but I mean, when or who took the lead on this, or is there any kind of early on company organization that kind of spearheaded this? Or
no, there's not one. One company. I just wrote a blog post. I write a blog post once a month, and you can go out to my website and look at it. But it's called Megatrends in the digital transformation and these new ecosystems, which is exactly the answer to that question.
All right. It's
about, and you can, you're welcome to read that. But the big idea is we're moving from a product economy to a service economy, and with all of the things that implies.
And before we get into some other questions, just let our listeners know that blog post, or what's the blog site, or how do they find out?
My website is www.alliancesprogress.com, alliancesprogress.com, or you can just Google me, Troy Gautier, and you can find it there.
And spell your last name real quick.
Gautier.
That is correct, sir.
Thank you. You're so kind.
Right. So let's that's where they would find a link to that blog post you just
that's
mentioned.
That's right.
Okay, cool. So talk to us about the advantageous and inconveniences of partnerships. We talk about these melding of entities, organizations coming together. What's the two sides of the coin there?
Well, first of all, you have to know how to partner, and that's quite complicated because typically we are in a world of competition. And, win, lose, buy, sell. And these are different types of relationships. So a good partnering relationship in the business world, for example, is not a client-supplier relationship, but also sometimes you will be competitors. Sometimes you'll go to market together. Sometimes you will go to market with additional third parties. And so there's complexity baked in. You have to learn how to share the pie, grow the pie together. These are all factors in successful strategic alliance development.
Troy, I was just wondering about Alliances Progress. How long have y'all been in business?
2.5 years.
2.5 years. And how does business find you?
Well, a lot of people from my blog posts and from my, I do speaking engagements and write quite a bit. And so I'm involved in these different associations. So people will sometimes reach out to me. And then I have a very extensive network myself that I've built over the last 30 years traveling around the world. And so, yeah.
Got a big referral base. That's great. And how, if I'm a business owner, how do I know it's time to reach out to someone like you?
Well, they say, how do you grow? You know, we talked a little bit about growth strategies earlier in the program. And, you know, there's three ways to grow. You can build your own growth, organic growth, open offices, hire people. You can buy your growth, M&A activity. Right. You can, integrate companies. Or you can partner to growth. So build, buy, or partner. So partnering solutions, we believe, are the least risky, least costly, and quickest way to market, especially concerning growth across geographies or service areas or industries.
So if I'm a business looking to grow, particularly with the partnering aspect of that, I could reach out to you. And then what do you bring as far as like how do you dissect what this company needs and then put a plan together? What kind of information do you need or how long does that take you to develop that plan for them?
Yes, the answer is yes. That's exactly what we design.
I like those answers.
we design and implement the solutions and typically anywhere from if it's just a channel play where you're looking to push products into new markets internationally and there's no intelligence built into the network, you can actually go pretty quick. In several months, you can get up and running and promote your products internationally. If there's intelligence built into the network, feedback loops, value-added services, a layer wrapped around that takes a bit longer. I would say 6 to 12 months, you can be up and running.
And you clearly identify those goals for that business and you know benchmark activity that you want them to implement. And then how long does it take before you can look back and say, okay, we've succeeded? Or,
about a year.
Okay.
And then you kind of walk away from the transaction at that point?
Well, I can, or we can continue working together because, okay. You know, hopefully that if we have a good working relationship, that will continue. But I'm not trying to create a dependency. I'm trying to enable
the and businesses. And you're trying to point them in the right direction, help them grow, and then let them decide whether your services are needed or not from that point.
Right. But maybe at that next level, when they want to expand again, they're going to reach back out to you and say, what next kind of thing.
That's right. And there's just so much to do and so many areas because one play is geographic across regions, but another play is across service offerings, another play is across industry expertise, another play is across innovation, another play is across accounts. I would like to get into new accounts. Right. How do I do that? Mm-hmm. Well, we know people who are in those accounts and we can put them together.
Make those connections. Mm-hmm. I like the simplicity how you clarified the business expanding, build, buy, but on the partnering. Does that get into, tricky situations, legal ramifications that are kind of unique to the others, right? Because, you align yourself with someone and you have, even if it's all written down in what seems to be absolute clarity, can you run into probably potentially more challenges as opposed to the other options, right?
That's possible, yeah. The simplest way is just, hey, Rich, I know somebody, give them a call, they'd like to do some business with you. So that's a very informal partnership. The most complex would be to design a 200 legal word document that would then define exactly the roles and responsibilities and revenue sharing between the firms and then everything in between.
Yeah, because the first one just sounds like a referral, hey, I recommend you connect with this person. I was thinking a business partnership would be kind of like an ongoing from intellectual property to technology of saying we're going to form this official alliance. We're going to share a customer base and that would be because then it gets into, profits. And if one partnership, if the scales tip in the wrong direction, that's what I was thinking in terms of legal complications.
Yeah, that's right. But you can do that very simply. Sometimes I'll set up a partnership that will just be a 2-page memorandum of understanding between two companies.
Okay.
Sometimes it requires, heavy legal documents.
Right.
But we try to not lead with the legal, otherwise you get bogged down and everything gets complicated.
I like that.
Everyone's worried about sharing money that we haven't made yet.
Yeah.
So that's
big time. So talk to us about, you mentioned speaking engagements and traveling to Europe. Do you get other parts of the world or who do you seek out? What types of topics do you speak on? Obviously, the ones we've been referencing here. But are there certain organizations and entities that you regularly speak out or seek to speak out or speak to?
Yes. First of all, we do have a global network. So I do travel to all continents at least once a year and to Europe back and forth at least once a quarter and around the U.S. I'm involved with several different companies on boards of directors or advisory boards. You mentioned earlier the Association of Strategic Alliance Professionals, ASAP, great acronym.
That's a great one.
Yeah. And so within that context, for example, we have a global conference once a year, and I'm often a keynote speaker at that.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, you are how many passport books have you filled up? I mean, you're a busy man. What's your next most exciting destination on the horizon?
Well, I'm leaving for Europe in 2 weeks, and I'll be there for a month, and we'll have business meetings in 6 different countries. And
wow.
I'm taking my family with me for a vacation, so that'll be fun.
We can do. How about we do a remote broadcast from there? We can do that, right?
Yeah, Business Radio X should expand into.
Well,
we
own the domain name International Business Radio. Yeah. We own the domain name, and we're launching it from here. But I'd say the roadshow sounds a little bit more sexy and exciting in Italy or Istanbul or what. I don't want to put you on the spot. You can pass on this one here. But throughout Europe, your favorite and least favorite destinations?
Well, that's a tricky one.
Okay, just go with the favorites. We'll leave the other ones off the list.
For lifestyle, you know, Italy and France are for me the best. Okay. The best places to.
Well, your heart is certainly. What part of France did you spend your most?
Well,
of the
we
20
moved
years?
Here from Lyon. Okay. My wife is from Normandy, and we live most of our life there in Paris.
Wow. Your military career took you to some...
I was stationed in Germany for a long time. I visited several countries while I was over there. Really enjoyed the German countryside and the cities as well. It's a beautiful, beautiful country.
Better than Iraq or Afghanistan?
Yeah, a lot better than that dusty old place for sure.
All right. Wow. I can't believe this just flew by here. So we've been thrilled to have you all in here in the studio. Remind our listeners, Troy, one more time, the best way for folks to reach out to you.
Well, you can just, as I said, Google me, Troy Gauthier, or you can look at my website, www.alliancesprogress.com.
Perfect. And social security number? blood type? All right. So, well, we're going to obviously rebroadcast this, and this podcast will live in perpetuity on our website. So we'll post everyone's contact information on there as well. So pleasure having you all in the studio here. And let's just round table one more time just to our other two guests. Remind our listeners the best way to reach out. And let's just limit it to one one destination contact point, if you would. Yeah.
Hit me up at cugaranholdings.com, CugaranHoldings.com.
Perfect. Okay. Great.
And you can find me at mymoneymanifesto.com.
Can't believe you got that domain name. That's pretty cool.
I was excited.
Yeah, I would have got that if you didn't. Yeah. Ryan, any closing thoughts here for today's show?
You can follow us on Twitter at Buckhead Radio X or find us on Facebook at Buckhead Radio X as well. And stay tuned next week, 10 a.m., to another exciting broadcast on Tuesday of Buckhead Business Radio, where we share the stories of those professionals like that joined us here today and the good work they're doing in the business community. And until next time, we'll see you on the radio.